Welcome back to Insight on Cap Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. 10 of the Democrats running for U.S. president will debate in Atlanta tomorrow night at Tyler Perry Studios, in fact. L.A. Times national political reporter Melanie Mason will be in Atlanta for the event, and we recorded a conversation yesterday before she started her travels. I asked how she sees this debate in the context of the ongoing public impeachment hearings.
I think it's going to be a real competition for eyeballs and attention, quite frankly, because we do have probably one of the most significant public impeachment hearings going on Wednesday morning. And then Wednesday night, you have these debates. And I do think there's a fair question of what is the saturation point that people can handle for political news in one day? What's the sort of space on front pages of the papers or leading off nightly broadcasts? Because you do have these two major competing news events. I do think it's interesting, and I found this on the trail, that it almost seems like the impeachment proceedings are going on these parallel tracks from the 2020 presidential race, and there's not a ton of crossover. So I think we can probably anticipate maybe a question or two about the impeachment hearings, but just as we saw in the September debate, the candidates talked about it for a little bit, but since they're all pretty much in agreement, it's not a real subject for the debate itself. And so therefore, I don't anticipate that we're going to be spending much time on it during the debate itself.
With the public hearings, though, it's much more clear that these people are campaigning to be the opponent of presumably the person who could be impeached right now. And that's in front of everybody everywhere on every media platform now.
Absolutely. And I do think, and we've seen this throughout the race, that there's been almost this competition to one-up each other in how much you can denounce President Trump. And so I wouldn't be surprised if you see the candidates go even more forceful in their language and condemning or trying to point to the latest revelations as evidence. But look, it's not like anybody on the stage was maybe a Donald Trump fan before, and the impeachment hearings have changed their mind. And they're going to be talking to a primary audience predominantly of Democrats who are not fans of the president. I think that the conversation around the impeachment hearing so much is how much these public hearings will sway the public opinion about President Trump and whether he should be removed from office. But that's a slightly different audience, I think, than the Democratic primary debate. Those are people who, according to polls, have pretty much hardened in their opposition to Trump, and they're unlikely to have their opinion change much one way or another based on what's said in these hearings.
Talk to me about Kamala Harris's campaign then, because in terms of going directly at Trump, she decided two debates ago to be very intense and upfront about that, more so than a number of the other candidates. And address just where her campaign is at this point. And she's one of two Californians who will be on the stage in Atlanta.
I think Senator Harris really wants to capitalize on this conversation. The phrase that we've heard from her is that it takes a prosecutor to prosecute the case against Donald Trump. And so she is using her criminal justice background. I think she's trying to appeal to people's memories of her performances in these Senate hearings of Bill Barr or former Attorney General Jeff Sessions as, you know, this real diligent take-no-prisoners prosecutor, and hoping that that will appeal to people as they can maybe picture her being on the debate stage against Trump. But the truth is that this is a rough patch for her campaign right now. I mean, she, after showing a lot of promise and showing a lot of strong performance in the polls during the midsummer, has been on a decline. She has had to really sort of regroup and revamp her campaign, laying people off, all but abandoning the state of New Hampshire. She's really going all in on Iowa. And that's been difficult for her. We've seen in recent polls that she still remains sort of stuck in the low single digits. And I think the question for her is, can she use this debate? Can she use this conversation around impeachment as a way to juice her campaign? Because it really does need a lifeline.
Tom Steyer is the other Californian, and there are 10 candidates on stage. Of course, the field is much bigger, but it's interesting to note who quit and who didn't make the cut since the last debate.
The last debate, we had a record-setting 12 people on stage, and two of the people who aren't on stage this time around will be former Texas Representative Beto O'Rourke, who has dropped out of the race, and former Housing Secretary Julian Castro, who's still in the race, but he did not reach the polling and donor thresholds to qualify to be on stage. And there are several other candidates who are still in the running, such as Colorado Senator Michael Bennett, Montana Governor Steve Bullock. These are people who are still particularly putting a lot of their chips in Iowa. Some of them are running TV commercials, doing a lot of events, but they're not getting that national attention, national traction that would get them on stage. And one of the things that we have found is that if you're not able to really get people's attention, either in these debates or have enough money to be on television, it's really hard to break out of what has been a very crowded field.
I'm talking with LA Times national political reporter Melanie Mason. She will be in Atlanta for the debate that is hosted by MSNBC and The Washington Post on Wednesday night. So are you walking in wide open to whatever happens? Are you listening for something in particular, Melanie? How does an assignment go when you get the ticket and the credential to go to the debate?
It's a good question. Well, first, just to burst everyone's bubble, one of the oddest things about covering these debates is that we reporters were not in the room for the debates themselves. We're actually watching it on a television just like everybody else. We're just in a giant filing center, usually adjacent to where the stage is. And so a lot of times I'll have people ask me, oh, what was the mood in the room? And I go, I don't know. But I do think that said, you're still going in. You have certain storylines, I think, that I'm interested to follow and to see if they materialize. One of those is Mayor Pete Buttigieg of South Bend, Indiana. He really has been ascendant in these last couple of months. He had a strong debate performance in October. And there have been polls, particularly in early states like Iowa and New Hampshire, that say that he is very firmly in the top tier, if not a front runner. Well, this is the first debate where he's really had that position. And so I will be watching to see, do the other candidates go after him? Is he now in the hot seat like we saw Senator Elizabeth Warren in the previous debate? So I'm waiting to see if that materializes. There are certain topics that have been hashed over, some may say to death in previous debates, such as health care, Medicare for all. But the truth is that there's been so much chatter on the campaign trail that I'm prepared to follow that debate if it comes up again. But I think that, you know, my hope as a viewer, but also as a journalist, is that there are some unexpected surprises. There are some organic moments. I think that we all can agree that the thing that we like the least of these debates is when somebody drops this really pre-rehearsed or canned line, maybe a bad joke, and you just know that they had rehearsed that for weeks on and it doesn't feel organic or fresh. But when there are moments that feel surprising or even a little titillating, I think that that's when it really captures people's attention and maybe can have a breakout moment that lasts in this very crowded and chaotic news cycle.
Some of the last debates, Melanie, have been 3 hours long. I think this one is a 2-hour debate, correct?
Yes, and thank God for that.
Let's go down the list of who will be on stage. And I'll do it in alphabetical order. Joe Biden, Cory Booker, Pete Buttigieg, as you were just talking about, Tulsi Gabbard, Kamala Harris, Amy Klobuchar, Bernie Sanders, Tom Steyer, Elizabeth Warren, and Andrew Yang. Can I go out on a limb here and ask you who's been, besides Pete Buttigieg, most interesting to watch and follow and write about?
I think that varies. I mean, it's been a long, very fluid, very kind of unpredictable campaign season. But I've been particularly drawn to the stories that we find unexpected. So, for example, Andrew Yang, who is this businessman who has really gotten a lot of support, particularly from grassroots donors, with this idea of a freedom dividend, which is his version of this universal basic income. I mean, he is really talking to people's concerns about automation, about the changing economy. And I don't think that most political reporters would have predicted his durability. I mean, he has outlasted several governors, several senators, former Congress members who have had to drop out of the race. But I think that there is something about what he is saying and the anxieties that he's speaking to that I think that the Democratic Party and journalists should take note. What is it about him that is resonating? And my colleague Seema Mehta of the LA Times has done some great stories on him in particular, so I'd recommend people check those out. But as a reporter, I'm always drawn to the things that I would have never expected, and his rise has certainly been one of them.
Let's talk about who's moderating, Melanie. This time around, it's all women.
Yes, and that's a rarity. So we have Ashley Parker of the Washington Post, and then from the MSNBC, NBC family, Rachel Maddow, Andrea Mitchell, and Kristen Welker. A lot of times I think that there's been one woman on the panel with two of her male colleagues. It's nice to see that you have women dominating the panel. It'll be interesting to see what kind of questions are asked and if it's different. There has been a lot of frustration, I think, among some liberal activists that reproductive health had not been asked quite often in many of these debates. In fact, both Kamala Harris and Cory Booker expressed frustration about that in previous debates. And so it'll be interesting to see if other issues that might be considered quote-unquote women's issues, which, you know, I hesitate to put those things in a box because obviously they're relevant to everybody. But the fact that you have an all-female panel, does that introduce a new variety of questions? Women journalists bring different perspectives. People from different ethnic backgrounds and racial backgrounds bring different perspectives. And those newer questions can yield more interesting and surprising exchanges.
Regarding the issues at this weekend's California Democratic Convention, delegates wanted to hear more about housing and homelessness, which some people may say is an issue that's emphasized in California. And you know that from being here in the state. How might that play? How much bigger might it play on the national stage?
I think that that's a good question, and frankly one that's been frustrating, I think, for a lot of California voters, because there was an expectation with California moving its primary date up to March 3rd to Super Tuesday that California perhaps would become more relevant in the presidential primary conversation. And in some ways it has, right? I mean, the candidates, they were here last weekend in Long Beach. They have been holding more public events in California than they have in past cycles. But when it comes to really talking about issues that Californians care about, the truth is that a housing affordability and homelessness is a very different conversation in Los Angeles than it is in rural Iowa. And when you have candidates still fixated on rural Iowa or Iowa more broadly, New Hampshire, South Carolina, as the states they have to address first, you're not getting maybe some of those more California-centric issues. I will say that because Nevada is another early state, right, I have noticed that some of the candidates have weighed in on local issues of homelessness there. Nevada does have homelessness rates that are very similar to California's. And so perhaps as the contest moves further out west, we will start hearing those issues being brought up more often.
So with Iowa out there, the caucus is happening February 3rd. How much do you think the candidates are going to try to speak more directly to Iowa voters than they might have otherwise?
I think that Iowa is really the ballgame for a lot of these campaigns. Not all of them, I should say. Former Vice President Joe Biden, his campaign is really telegraphing that they think he can withstand maybe not so great a finish in the first two states. They really see his firewall being in states like Nevada and particularly South Carolina, once you get to states that have more diverse populations, larger Black voting populations and Latino populations as well. But for candidates like Kamala Harris, for Cory Booker, for Amy Klobuchar, if they can't manage a strong finish, maybe not a first place finish, but a strong finish in Iowa, then it's really hard for them to find the momentum to move forward. And remember, this is a conversation that they're having not just with voters, but they're having with donors. And if they're trying to convince donors, whether that's big money donors or grassroots donors, yes, please invest in my campaign, you have to show viability. And Iowa is still sort of the first big test of viability.
All right, Melanie, safe travels to Atlanta. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And that was Melanie Mason, national political reporter for the LA Times. Tomorrow night's two-hour debate starts at 6 p.m. here in the West. NPR does not have broadcast rights. We will not be carrying the debate live. It is an MSNBC and Washington Post event. So those are two clues for where you might be able to find it. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Cap Radio.